Welcome to the Dadpreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Alex. And today I have the exciting pleasure of talking to another homeschool dad, entrepreneur, and author. So Jason Kotecki, he is all of those things and more. So I know for all of our listeners, it's going to be an exciting episode because he'll be able to bring some of the perspectives that I don't always get to talk about here, which is the joy of being a, you know, homeschool parent. Him and his wife, Kim, they have homeschooled their kids. And of course, he's an author. He's done TED Talks. So he's got a lot of great things to talk about here for those who are wishing to get out of the corporate world or start their own thing, perhaps chart out a different path, you know, gives the opportunity to travel with your kids, which I know, Jason, you do. So without further ado, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Alex. I'm excited to be chatting with you. In many ways, it's almost like talking to a brother from another mother. So it should be a fun conversation.
Absolutely. And by the way, I mean, for those that are going to watch us on YouTube, awesome background. I love your background.
Thank you. Yeah, this is one of my newest paintings that I finished. It's called Evening Show.
And, I love it.
Yeah, just as a little aside, it was inspired by this book I read about this woman who was describing this really cool night sky that she saw with her grandnephew. And then there were all these houses with their lights on, but no one was looking at the wonder in the sky and all around them. And basically because we could see it every night. And so we kind of take for granted the stuff. So anyway, the idea was like, well, if there were giant glowing jellyfish, would we then pay attention to what's going on around us? And we probably would for about a week, and then that would get old too. So
yes. So I totally agree with you. Earlier this week, so I heard maybe Saturday, there was going to be this like big meteor shower. And, you know, I said, oh, okay. So for one night, and I thought I was going to do it every day, and I didn't. I got the telescope out and I stared for 15 minutes, and I really intended to stare for like an hour. And I'm you know, zooming in, didn't see any, you know, it's cool. No shooting stars, anything like that. But it was like being present, being in the moment brings like so like a different vibe. It's almost like a reset button. Yep. And then I didn't do it for the rest of the week. So to your point, you're right. Maybe if we had jellyfish. But before we get into the show, I would say like, you know, it would be really cool on a podcast. I don't think anybody's doing this. While we're doing, we have people with interesting products and creations like you do. You have your book right there, which you're going to talk about. We have your painting. You know, it would be really cool because it's an entrepreneurial show here too. If they were able to scan the picture and be able to buy your product in real time.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah.
Right? And we could bid an auction in real time.
There you go. That'll have me thinking the rest of the weekend. So that's good.
I'm telling you, it's going to be a new concept. People are going to go, oh, we could sell stuff live. Cause you know, they do that like on TikTok, Instagram, and Amazon live stream, which is, I'm not a big consumer. So I'm a big marketer, which is interesting because while I can really understand consumer behavior and market to them the right way, I have a hard time buying things, not because I'm cheap, but just because I feel like I don't need a lot of stuff. Yeah. So it's
a superpower, cool. Alex. That's pretty good.
Is it? Okay.
Well, I think yeah.
Most people around me would just say he's really just frugal, anti-products, anti-consumerism. But anyways, so tell me about your background, Jason. Like when did you leave corporate America? How did it all start, the journey into homeschooling and working from home?
Yeah, well, let's see if I can condense it as well as I can, and then we can go in whatever direction you want. But I think when I was in high school, I had a job working at a car dealership, and you know, I'd wash cars and run errands, and it was actually a really good job for a teenager, but I hated it because I had to be there from this time to this time. It felt like I was trapped, and I kind of knew then I was unemployable. I kind of made a promise to myself that I wanted to do my own thing and be my own boss. And so I had an interest in art. I went to art school. And at the time, there were not as many illustrator jobs that were on staff. It was becoming much more freelance. So I knew I'd kind of have to go in that direction anyway. And the first, I'd say, 5 to 10 years of my business after my wife and I got married was me throwing spaghetti at the wall, trying to figure out how do you do what you love and then mix it with that Venn diagram of like what people will actually pay for. And that took us a while to figure that out. And lo and behold, my wife started out as a kindergarten teacher. And through her connection, I got invited to come into schools and do cartooning workshops for kids. And I would go be in for like 3 days and I teach them how to write and draw and do these comics. And then I was pretty good at it, but it burned me out. It was just so much energy. But then somewhere along the line, I got asked to speak at a church. And because I was good at holding the attention of kids, they said, can you do a whole family thing where my message was really more aimed to the grownups, but I could hold the attention of the kids pretty well. And I just sort of fell in love with that. I was like, oh, this is great. And so that led to establishing myself more as a speaker, where I speak at now. I speak at conferences all over for all kinds of different companies and organizations, and have been able to incorporate my art into it. I tell stories that are representative of my artwork, that kind of like this here, where I'll, my jellyfish painting, I'll talk about wonder and how important curiosity is for us as people, as employees, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then there's this image that is kind of the anchor for them that they can then remember it when they leave. And so my books, my art, all of it is kind of this cool mishmash of things tied together. And we basically focus on helping people either avoid the burnout that often comes with our modern society, or how to be more innovative and creative by tapping into some of those more childlike qualities that we lose along the way. So it's a long, short way of describing this long journey that we've had. 5 years into our business, my wife retired and then began working with me full time. So she's got a great complementary skill set. And she was really into teaching and helping kids, but realized that maybe she could help more kids by helping the parents, by helping the grownups who are around the kids live better lives and be better examples for the kids that they're raising. So that's kind of the long and short of it. And we kind of, as far as homeschooling, man, we stumbled into that as well. As a self-employed entrepreneur, as many of your listeners would know, you don't always have great health insurance. And so there, you have to kind of be creative with how you figure that out. And so when we were pregnant with our first, we didn't have maternity or anything like that, but there was a birth center in our town where it was much more economical. And we had midwives and they had medical facilities, but it was a hop, step, and a jump from home birth, which was what we did for our second two kids. And we just fell in love with it. And once we got into that world, we were exposed to this idea of homeschooling and we're like, oh, wow. And just kind of started to see the benefits. But with all of it, we, you know, again, Kim was a teacher. She was in the system. And like, so it was like, this is how you're supposed to do it. And so it was just like baby steps that we led into all this. And slowly but surely, we just kind of opened our eyes to some of the benefits. Now we can't imagine our life any other way. So it's weird, but it's good.
And it all happened overnight, right?
Exactly. It was like 25 hours is all it took. Yeah.
You know, it's like that diagram that says, like, you know, in startup world, and I've taught many startups, mostly the marketing side of how to make your startup successful. And we'll start with like a little diagram that's like it's going up like hockey stick effect, right? But like really just as it takes off, it just kind of goes scribbles everywhere.
Yep.
And then you had like this as the destination goal, but then you end up here. Like that's what it's all about. And it's the journey, right? Mm-hmm. The challenges, the obstacles at first. I think for us, the same thing, Jason, you know, when we started with homeschooling, we moved from South Florida where it was like hustle and bustle, get out of the system. I had about 40 employees in an office. And while the business was great, I wasn't spending as much time. So everybody's story. Mm-hmm. But the only difference is you decide that I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to chart out a different path. And when we moved up here to the Space Coast, which is right around Cape Canaveral. Yeah. And we said, okay, cool. We're going to, office is going to be fully virtual. So we're going to do that. And since we're doing that, we're going to do homeschool. And now here we are 6 years into it. And I share that with the audience, but I shared it with you before we got on the podcast here that I genuinely do struggle sometimes with sharing how meaningful and fun, interesting that experience is. Yes, it's hard. Yes. But you know what? So is everything else that you do in life hard, right?
Yeah.
So talk to me about and to our listeners about what you think some of the benefits are, both on this like different path in as an adult, as a parent, right? As a couple, and you guys are doing it together, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And then talk to me about what you think the benefits are for the kids.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so this is a thing I could probably talk about for about 20 hours straight.
Cool. We've got it. Let's go.
Let me,
it's a telethon. We can raise some money while we do it.
There you go. Yeah. What comes to mind first is freedom. And I think that's a word that would resonate with a lot of your listeners, because if you are an entrepreneur, that's part of the reason you want that is freedom. Right. And so the idea of having a school dictate when my kids need to be in school, when I have to come for parent teacher conferences, when they're going to have the school play, like all those things are great, but it's like this, it goes back to me of like, I don't want anyone telling me what to do. So for better or for worse, there's that vibe. But because of that, you have the freedom. Like in September, we went to Yellowstone for the first time, and we were able to go. It was a little bit more of the off season because all of the regular schools were just getting into session. So we didn't have to fight the major crowds. We had a great time. As far as the benefits, I mean, obviously another benefit for us is just being able to be around our kids. Like our kids are just, they're cool people. And we're only blessed to have them for a certain amount of time and to be able to really pour into them for longer than we would otherwise have is really great. As far as our kids go, I think we've ruined them from school, from normal. They are very independent, and which is going to serve them well as they get into adulthood. And we've also, one of the things, there's always these things where people talk about homeschooling of like, well, what about this and what about that and how will they learn that? And
socialization
is one of the biggest ones. And I always think about like, that's exactly why we homeschool, is for the socialization, because when they're in school, they're exposed to all these other things that I don't want my kids exposed to, both in, my wife used to teach kindergarten, and she had a line that said, when you have a 5-year-old in your class, you don't just have a 5-year-old, you have all of their older siblings as well, because everything their older siblings are into gets brought to the 5-year-old, and then that 5-year-old brings it into the rest of the class. And it's not really about sheltering our kids. It's about protecting them until they're mature enough to handle certain things in life, right? And I know in different ways, Kim and I have talked about each of our three kids. I think they would struggle in a traditional school for different reasons. So for example, my youngest daughter had a speech delay early on that we had to work through. And because of that, her reading and writing was delayed a little bit. Well, if she was in regular school, she might be in a remedial class. Maybe she'd be made fun of. And she's now reading in her bedroom at night, and she's doing fine, but she's just not at the right timetable that they're supposed to be at, right?
And to be fair to the system, as I always say, I'm not trying to, throw shade or anything like that. It's the fact is, the truth is, there's nothing that the system can do. There's 50 million kids here in the U.S. that K-12 that wake up every day and go to school. Okay. There are no companies that are that large, right? So if you think of it in terms of a company, 50 million, and then you've got millions of educators, administrators. I mean, it's a crazy moving. So you have to have a system that is boxed in, that is not meant to customize that experience to each one. And I'll just to kind of piggyback on your, the socialization thing. One thing that I like to share here with our listeners, for those who maybe don't really know about the research behind that, and how there is no research to show that, you know, so-called like sheltering your kids by homeschooling them is going to ruin their socialization. There's no studies that actually tie the two together. And it's a very, there's a very simple explanation for why I know this doesn't work that way. For anyone who's out there working and you have colleagues, right? And you, or if you're in school and you have classmates, someone's behavior is someone's behavior. Like if they're an introvert, they're going to be an introvert, whether they go to a high school with 10 kids, a thousand kids, or whether they're homeschooled, they're still going to be introverted. So I think people sometimes mix the two. And I actually have kids in my family and friends whose kids are like really introverted. There's no explanation, and you can't just blame gaming or this or that and the other. And they think to themselves, what, but wait, my kid is going to school with a bunch of kids. Your kids are being homeschooled, but your kid is more social. I think that there's a confusion there for many people who don't really know, but that there's nothing to show there that by homeschooling your kids. In fact, I think it goes back to what you said, Jason, those opportunities to travel and do hands-on and then be more independent. Those are huge benefits that you just can't get in a system.
Yeah. Well, you know, Alex, your point about that too is the, in some ways, and again, there's a reason the way schools do things, right? And it's actually very weird and unnatural to group kids by their same age when the rest of society doesn't work the way. I mean, you have a lot of employees. I assume they're not all your age, right?
My employees, span from like 20 to 70.
Yeah, which is how real life is, right? So our kids, we have a homeschool co-op. We have different families that are involved in the neighborhood. My kids can socialize with kids their age, kids younger than them, senior citizens, because they're exposed to it all the time. And that, I think, is gonna serve them well as well. So, but again, like you said, a lot of the people I speak to are often teachers at education conferences, and the teachers are saints on earth trying to do what is an increasingly hard job in our society. So this is certainly not to disparage them or the job they do or anything like that, but to basically just paint a picture on the other side of what's possible for people.
Absolutely. In terms of, you called it freeing yourself from adultitis. Tell us about what is that about?
Yeah, so that's basically our entire mission in life, is to help businesses and individuals and teams fight adultitis. So that is literally, adultitis is swelling of the adult. So if you have too much adult, if you take yourself too seriously, if you're not dreaming big, if you're not being curious, if you're pessimistic all the time, that's going to hold you back. And one of the central theme of a lot of our work is that we were pretty wise when we were 5 years old, and we slowly lose that wisdom as we get older. And I like to encourage people to tap back into that childlike spirit, because I think it's helpful to navigate change and create resiliency and see to find opportunities in a world that is always changing. You need a little bit of that wide-eyed wonder to experience gratitude and find opportunities for success that other people might be missing. So that's what adultitis is all about. And, you know, when we're recording this right now in December around Christmas time, the Grinch is probably one of the most famous full-blown adultitis sufferers who is also a survivor. So it's a perfect metaphor when you look at him as someone who has adultitis and then someone who turned it around.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if I'm reading you right, you're not suggesting that you don't take your life goals, whatever you want to create in this world, whether it's you want a path. So I speak at a lot of colleges to kids who are, you know, seeking a degree in marketing, and, you know, they all have their path, right? Like, I want to go here, then I'm going to work at a brand, then work at Google or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And so you've got your goals. I don't think you're advocating that you don't pursue those goals. It's just that you find a different way there, it doesn't mean that you don't take life or your work serious.
Yeah, exactly. We talk about it. Take your work seriously. Don't take yourself seriously, right? That's kind of the distinction. And I think that when you have adultitis, as we call it, you're actually limiting your paths, right? So to be able to have a path set out that you're working toward, and then what happens if the economy changes or suddenly the market drops out of that? Now you're screwed. Well, you're not screwed if you have a resilient mindset, if you're creative and curious. One of the things that my wife and I teach all the time, and this is frankly what helped get us through the pandemic, because as a speaker, there were no stages to speak on in the pandemic the way we were used to. So we asked this question all the time. Now that this has happened, what does this make possible? And the now that this has happened can apply to any storm, curveball, dead end that you run into that maybe, you know, give yourself 10 minutes to be angry and sad and mad about it. That's okay. We get to be human, right? But the more quickly you can say, all right, that happened, that sucked, I wish it wouldn't have, I'd like to have a time machine to go back in time to fix it so it wouldn't, you can't do it. But what you can do is say, what does this make possible? And so that question now helps you to see the silver lining that is available, right? So for us, pivoting to learn to do virtual, mm-hmm. Which is what we did during the pandemic, we gained, I mean, the set that you see me on, this was like many iterations, right? The first time we ever did anything, it was crappy, you know, it was terrible lighting. It was just the camera on our laptop. The sound was bad. But we tinkered because we knew like this was a way that we could connect. And now the pandemic's over, but now we have this new skill and this talent that we can use for other things to make our business better. So that would be a thing I'd share with your listeners is like, if you're in the middle of a big ass storm right now, say, well, that sucked, but now that it has happened, what does it make possible? And you might not have an answer right away, but just kind of keeping it in the front of your head now, you'll be on the lookout for what could be a huge breakthrough.
All right. In terms of your books, I know you've authored many books. The one that's sitting on your table right now, talk to us about that one, The Nice.
Yeah, this is the newest one. It's called Must Be Nice, Your Guide to Growing Beyond the Compare Game. And I don't know about you. I know as an artist and an entrepreneur, it's kind of like a twofold punch. It's really easy to get stuck comparing yourself to the success of your colleagues and friends and heroes and things like that. And so I wanted to write a book about that because it's a challenge that I've dealt with. There was a point as an early speaker when I would go to a conference and I would see all these amazing speakers on stage, and I would have that refrain that I'm sure everyone here listening has said maybe recently is like, must be nice, right? You see some advantage someone else has, and you say, must be nice to be able to do that or have that skill or have that talent. And I realized in that moment that I had a must be nice that I was not even taking advantage of. I was speaking, but I wasn't really incorporating my artwork into it because I saw it as kind of two separate things. And I was like, if you actually incorporated this together, you would really stand out. And someday you will be on that stage and people will be looking at you and say, oh, must be nice to be an artist and be able to have all these pretty slides and sell your prints at your programs and all this. And the weird thing, Alex, in 2021, I got to be the opening keynote speaker at the National Speakers Association in Las Vegas. And my talk was called Must Be Nice. And I was there to encourage people. And it's like that, you knowing about marketing, that's the key, right? Is to figure out what makes you different. What's your must be nice that someone doesn't have, right? And so my biggest message with this book is to help people deal with that envy, but also help them to uncover there must be nices that might be hidden that they may not have discovered, and to combine them together in some interesting ways, because I think we all have a must be nice. And it doesn't make any sense to wish for someone else's. You need to figure out what yours are and make the most of them.
I love that. And you're absolutely right. The FOMO that people have experienced in the business world is real. you know? And I really early on in my entrepreneurial journey, I mean, probably 9 years into it, we went through the fallout, the crisis in 08, 09. Mm-hmm. That was like the best experience, because from that point forward, I just said, I cannot compare myself to anyone, because I had had a huge failure, you know, for a lot of different reasons. Mm-hmm. But it was a good experience to go through that. Thankfully, we didn't have kids then. And otherwise, it would have been very different. I, you know, which I think it should be noted that when you're an entrepreneur, those that are listening, that maybe they're expecting to have kids. And I've actually had one guest here recently that was saying, oh, I'm really nervous. I'm an entrepreneur, but I've got kids I got to take care of. And I'm like, I understand. So your risk tolerance is a little bit different, and you'll find your way. But, you know, the thing is that I think you have to, going back to your initial points, like you have to be happy about what you're doing. You have to be really intentional. And I do love the freedom. It's like what you were talking about, the freedom. And then sometimes the must be nice is just to kind of piggyback on that point about the book, is that sometimes you think that that's what you want, and then you mm-hmm. pursue it and you get there and you go, "Huh, like, okay, so I did it." And then you move on to something else, because it's like we go through all these like ups and downs, and then you hit a goal and then you go, yeah, nothing really changed. It's just like, now I did that. What's next?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. It's about the journey, right? Once you get to a certain point, you realize how much it's the journey that's kind of exciting and interesting, and the milestones along the way. There's surprises. There's things you think you never would have done. There's things that you thought would be awesome that aren't. And you know, to speak to your point about someone who doesn't have kids yet but was an entrepreneur, that also could be a really good blessing. So Kim and I were married for 8 years before we had our first child, and I was terrified because we were both at that point working 60 hours a week trying to get our business going, and we had a colleague, a friend, who basically gave us the advice that said, figure out the things that are working the best. Because at that point, we were still kind of in the spaghetti throwing stage, and we were doing all this stuff. He's like, what are the things that are working the best? And let go of everything else. And it gave us permission to focus on these few things, mm-hmm. let go of the rest, which freed up more time to be with this baby and sleep. And, you know, you're in a coma for the first year, just kind of. But what was also a cool thing about that is, because we focused on the one or two things, our business actually grew, because we were putting more effort in. We put more gasoline on the stuff that was working and disregarded the stuff that was taking up time. So that could be a benefit if someone is in that boat where they've got this business rolling and now they have a new little one on the way, and they're like, oh my gosh, I don't know how this fits. Is to focus on the stuff that's working, and your business may actually be better off for it as you go along.
Yeah, no, good point. Good point. I love that you merged the two, like you said, the entrepreneurial side mm-hmm. with the art side, because so much of entrepreneurship is being creative. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a book that I wrote about marketing lead generation about 3 years ago. And I realized like every campaign that I did, no matter how big the budget was, and you mm-hmm. could have a whole creative team at a Fortune 500 company. So you're like, oh, this campaign is definitely just going to deliver results. And then sometimes it doesn't. It's kind of like you hear about those Super Bowl ads that you're like, huh, you hear that the company spent like $5 million and it just fell flat. No sales. Yeah. And you're like, how? They're a brand. They were on the Super Bowl. It just, there's so much that happens. So it's that like Venn diagram that I have. It's like art, science, and luck. Art, science, mm-hmm. luck. Yep. And I feel like a lot of what I do requires those three, like, you know, getting really creative with the artistic side, really analytical, data-driven. That's like mm-hmm. science. But then by luck, what I mean too, and I think people mistake this, Jason, is like, I don't mean like I'm just like sitting here and praying for luck. I mean, you're putting yourself kind of like you put yourself in those, in the right place so that the opportunities knock. That's luck right there in a way, you know, because I think, you can't take credit for everything. Some things just happen and you can't even explain it. You're like, what? How did I was at this conference, met this person, and this led to something much bigger. Partly it's luck.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it is. You just don't know what is going to resonate with people. I mean, as an artist, I do a lot of paintings, and some of them I fall in love with. Some of them like, oh my God, people are going to love this one. And then it's like crickets, like no one buys the print. No, you know, and then other ones it's like, oh, this is okay. It took me an hour and it like sells like crazy. Like people love it. Like, oh, this is so great. And it's like, it's kind of like, you got to give yourself a lot of lottery tickets, right? Cause you don't know which one's going to hit. And so that's where the work comes in, right? You got to put yourself out there. You got to try a lot of different things, so that you have more of a chance that something will take off and connect with people, right? So I totally get that.
Well, I think, you know, for our listeners who are entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs to be or parents, there's a lot that they can take from your experience, what you and Kim have done, obviously charting your path from, you know, corporate America, so to speak. I mean, I know you guys were in the school system, so it's a little different than corporate America, but, and then moving towards a life that is giving you more freedom and allowing your kids to grow in a way that they couldn't otherwise. So, kudos to you guys. And we really appreciate you being on the podcast. But before we close out today, I'd love if you could just wrap it up with any insights, tips, or piece of advice that you think would be great for our listeners.
Whew, okay. Well, let's see. I think the idea about asking that question, I really want to underline that of the, now that this has happened, what does this make possible? So you talked about, you know, the 2008, 2009 crisis that was terrible for you. Obviously, it was not something that you would have chosen, but then it led you on a new path, right? So it's like that's what that made possible. And at the time, it seemed like it kind of sucked, right?
Yeah.
But the other thing I would encourage people to look for is rules that don't exist. That was another book I wrote in 2016. We can talk about that another time. But the concept is, what are the things you're doing all the time because you're supposed to be doing them, or because you've always done them that way, or because society or some old dead white guy said to do it a certain way, right? That there's a lot of opportunity hidden in discovering rules that don't exist, is what we call them. So the fact that for me as an entrepreneur, one of the best things is when I was in school, I used to have what my wife and I call Sunday night dread, where it was like, oh, you had the freedom of the weekend, but Sunday night was always a little melancholy because you knew the next day you were going back to school. And I felt that way when I worked at my teenage job, like, oh, I got to go to work tomorrow. Like, Alex, I don't remember the last time I have ever had Sunday night dread, because a long time ago, Kim and I decided that we were going to break the rule that you're supposed to hate Mondays. Right. And we wanted to create a life that we didn't want to escape from, which is where a lot of people find themselves. And so I would encourage anyone who's on the fence about this, like whether it's homeschooling or starting your own thing or starting a new initiative within your business, like give it a try. You never know. Like you said, you might get lucky.
Well, great, great advice to end on a super, super high note. Jason, thank you so much for being on a podcast today. I know we're going to have you back.
Sounds good. Thank you, Alex. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat.